The challenge we have when we look at using trap catchers is that we want to correlate them with trap density. That's kind of what we want to use, whether we do monitoring, early detection, whatever we want. What we face typically is that we have our trap catcher and we find it difficult to correlate it directly to insect density because of a lot of environmental conditions, such as time of year, temperature, humidity, population density, and all these other things. And what we also see is that there are some factors that are actually associated with the trap itself, such as what height we are placing the trap at, what lure we are using, the shape, all of these things that are associated with the trap. And this makes it very, very difficult for us to make any assertion about the insect density based on our trap catchers. And actually, quite few people have been able to do that on a consistent basis, I being one of them, trying hard, but not been very successful. And to illustrate this, I'm going to show a data set that we published, has been published a couple of times in different versions. We were looking at some warehouse beetle trap catches in a typical warehouse. At each of these red dots, we had two traps. We had one sitting at the bottom on the floor, and we had immediately above it a pheromone trap sitting. And if you correlate, we had 9 weeks of trapping, and we had 37 traps out there. We lost some, so the total sum of 234 is not equal to 9 times 37. But you look at this and you say, okay, so we got 234 points, we got an R square, it was very significant. But you can actually see that when you look at this pattern, that it's highly dependent on a couple of points. So even though we had 234 points, if we take those two out that are highlighted in that blue ellipsoid there, we actually go down to an R square of about 11, a 0.11. And if we take two more points into that, so now we're down to 229 points, we're actually down to a very, very low R square. And even though it's very significant, it kind of shows how you with regression analysis, a few points can actually skew your results dramatically. And it basically shows that the trap catches we have with the two traps are completely different. At least they're not very, very correlated. And that's exactly the problem. So that brought me to think a little about what can we do about this? Is there any way we can in some way make this more consistent? And the best way to illustrate my hypothesis here is to look at a glass and determine whether it's half full or half empty. And we kind of tend to always look at the numbers themselves and say, how many captures do we have? And use that as an estimate of our population density. What we tried to do was, we thought, what if we, instead of focusing on the half full, what if we focus on the half empty part? So that instead of looking at exactly how many counts we got, we could look at how many of our traps were actually empty. So that was our approach, and I'm going to follow that line of thought for the next couple of slides here. So what we did was we looked at the average trap catcher over a wide range of data sets, and these are all insect captures in stored product food processing environments. So, but we think that this could also apply to insects outside the post-harvest environment. And what we saw was that there was actually a fairly good correlation between average trap catchers and the proportion of traps that had zero captures. You will notice here that two colors seem to be standing out. You've got some yellow colors and you've got some green dots there, and they were actually one species by itself. So two data sets from one species that didn't seem to follow this. And we got a pretty good R-square on this entire analysis of 13 data sets. But if we took, and I should say, we used this exponential decay curve there, and we had an I and a J as our variables, and only in two of those 13 data sets were both of these coefficients significant from the overall mean. When we removed those two, and they were of the square-nosed fungus beetle, once we removed them from it, we could see that we got a very high R-square. So we kind of knew we were on our way to something, and we thought we could get even closer and get even something even more consistent. So what we did was, and I should maybe make a little, I'm going to make a little detour here and say that what you typically expect a data set to be is you expect it to follow some sort of a clumped or aggregated distribution because of your trap catches typically being following that distribution, yes. Meaning that the variance is higher than the mean, and that also means that they typically fall a negative binomial distribution. Well, when you work with negative binomial distributions and are interested in sampling plans, you have to calculate the K parameter, which is a fairly standard thing to do. And you can actually, based on a fairly simple formula, determine the probability of capturing X insects based on the mean and that K parameter. And this is especially easy to do when you are trying to catch to predict how many zero captures you're going to get. So on the same data set, including all 13, this is what we came up with when we used that prediction, showing that a very, very strong correlation between the number of zero captures predicted and the ones observed. And we were very pleased about that, of course, because that basically showed us that this is the scenario we used to be looking at, where we have all these individual variables affecting the performance of our trap, and then we superimpose on top of that all the environmental variables, and based on that we want to try to determine the insect density. Well, we felt that we are now down to a much more simple complex, where we can actually focus on the environmental conditions and don't have to worry too much about all the factors affecting the trap catches themselves. So our novel approach is that we are now taking the total number of traps with zero captures. We are dividing that with the total number of traps we have. So we come up with a proportion. Well, once you have proportion, your mean becomes bigger than your variance, and now you're looking at a positive binomial distribution, which is a very, very convenient distribution to follow because it is independent of the K parameter. So it makes it even easier to calculate to make any sequential sampling plans. And this is basically what we came up with. These are actually the basic decision lines you're used to see when you see sequential sampling plan, except that they are asymptotic, and that has to do with the fact that we are working with proportions now. We're not working with absolute numbers. So basically what we can do here now is we've developed this system based on our data, and we can now see that based on the number of trapping stations or traps that we have, and based on the level of accuracy we want, we can now determine whether we need to take action or not. Okay. And we also showed that this basically tells us that we need at least 12 trapping stations or traps within a given environment to make a decent decision, and that catching with more than about 35 doesn't make much sense. We have submitted this, and this is in press right now, this paper, so it will come up probably in the next volume of JEE. We have basically shown that trap catches are very difficult to predict. That has been known, and we have shown that. We have shown that proportion of empty traps can be predicted very accurately based on a negative binomial distribution, but to make it more consistent, more because you use different numbers of traps each time, that's why we wanted to convert it into proportions. And we will also had in mind when we made this that we wanted to make it very user-friendly, and of course if you are out there servicing traps, the easiest thing to do is determine whether a trap is empty or not. So if you're servicing all your traps and finding out that 2 out of 10 are empty, well, there you go, you can plot it into our sampling plan, and it can be used that way as a decision support tool. Of course, what we don't have in our sequential sampling plan, and that you should need, that needs to be included, is of course you need to look at the economic threshold, and that has to be incorporated. And we basically, based on this, suggest that any sampling environment does not seem to need more than, it should have between 10 and 30 traps. And with that, I want to say thank you and take any questions if there are any. Yeah?
In many agricultural settings, having even multiple traps
I'm being asked to comment on the fact that in most agricultural settings you can't have more than 5 traps, and that's exactly one of the problems. I will say this, that there is a strong tendency toward more precision ag-based practices, and farmers, growers, extensionists, I think all levels are understanding the value. We have, as a community, becoming more aware of the fact that 2 points is really not a whole lot. I know, but even growers, so there is an increasing tendency to I think we need to appreciate the value of these higher numbers, and that is the way to go. We think that coming up with an approach that seems to be working well for as little as 10 traps is already an improvement from where we were before. I have published some papers where we talked about using 35 if you want to do contour mapping and stuff like that, and that is totally out of range.
Even higher premium, I'd add, on less expensive traps.
Sorry?
What's an even higher premium on less expensive, more efficient traps?
Yes, I guess so. Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much.